bringing nothing less than the Ark of the Covenant, the Israelites' ultimate symbol of God, and God being on their side because they're the good ones. They're bringing that Ark into David's new capital city, Jerusalem. Everything makes sense. God is easy to figure out. Be good, you'll prosper. Be bad, God will punish you. Ergo, if you are prospering like David is, then you must be good. If you're not, then you must be wicked. That's what David and the Israelites must be feeling like they've learned through all this. Something like, blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. Not so the wicked, they're like chaff that the wind blows away. For the Lord watches over the way of the wicked, and the way of the wicked will perish. That's the very first psalm. So David's on his way to Jerusalem. He's celebrating this incredible truth that God is on his side because he's good, and he's bringing his very symbol of God, the Ark of the Covenant, with him. It's right there in an old ox cart rattling down an ancient uneven road with them. And David, who knows that God is good and that he, David, must be good, and that only good things can happen to him because of that, is dancing with all of his might as his entourage serves as his ancient DJs, laying down their best dance tracks with harps, lyres, tambourines, cymbals, and apparently sistrums, which I imagine is just an old-timey word for sick drums. Amidst the partying, however, the oxen cross onto some different terrain, a threshing floor, and they stumble. The ark starts to tip. And Uzzah, one of the people assigned to keep an eye on the ark while everybody else parties, reaches out to save it. And Uzzah is immediately struck dead. God killed him, the text says, uncomfortably. Now, if your biblical footnotes are like mine, they rush to explain. And they rush to keep intact the very same logic that David had after his victory over Saul. The footnote writers in my Bible rush to try to make sure we can all still be confident that God is always good to those who are good, and God would only ever allow bad to happen to those who are bad. So they rush to make the case that Uzzah was bad. They rush to say that touching the ark was a big sin, and Uzzah did a bad thing, and so, see, therefore, God's just still the same God David was dancing for before, because God does good things to good people and bad things to bad people, like Uzzah. But David's reaction is different. He may be a psalm writer, but he's clearly not the one writing the footnotes in my Bible. Because David's reaction's very different. He is furious with God. And let's be honest, of course he is. Uzzah was just trying to save the ark. While everyone else was partying, Uzzah was the one trying to do the right thing. And even if there was something wrong with how they were carrying and protecting the ark, Uzzah was following David's orders. Uzzah is following David's orders, and within those orders, he's trying to protect the ark. What's happened, David recognizes, isn't fair. And as much as the authors of our footnotes try to quickly smooth it over, David actually stews in the honest and true questions here. He's surely thinking, if God always does good for the good and bad for the bad, if God is a predictable judge and I can count on the results, then why did Uzzah have to die? And so David, overwhelmed with what has just happened, can't walk, let alone dance, another step. He parks the ark in the nearest home, and he sits down to try to make sense of it. Is this when he writes something like, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving us? So far from the words of my groaning? You're supposed to be the Holy One, the praise of Israel. Our fathers trusted you and you delivered them. They were not disappointed, but now I feel like a worm, not a man. All who see me mock me. He trusts in the Lord. Ha! Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him. since he delights in him, they jeer. How's this loving God who's always good to the good working out for you, David? The foes in David's mind, if not his real life, are jeering at him. That's based on Psalm 22, by the way, which is the one right after the one I quoted earlier, the one that says, O Lord, the king rejoices in your strength for the victories you give in joy. David's not just angry, though. He's also full of fear. How can the ark of the Lord ever come to me? He asks. And since the ark represents God being on his side, the question is, can I actually trust this God after all? If a bad thing can happen to an innocent person, is God really good? Remember this. In this moment, David must have had at least two questions. Why can bad things happen to a good person? And in a world where bad things happen to innocent people, can I actually trust God? David doesn't run out and abandon God over these questions, but he takes a break from everything else he's doing. He parks the ark. He presumably waits for answers. I could say in some confidence that for however long David waited on that first question, why can bad things happen to a good person, it probably wasn't answered for him. Because it appears that we usually don't really have an answer we can understand to that question. We at least don't have an answer to that in this world. I know from my own experience, some of those I shared with you in Advent about Landon's accident, that waiting for that answer from God often leads to no clear answer. But we also know this because the Bible has a whole book, the book of Job, dedicated to acknowledging that horrible things happen to innocent people, and there just isn't an answer to that question that ever fully makes sense to us in this world. And here, maybe it's worth noting that biblical scholar Rochelle Gilmore has recently made an interesting argument that where this text says God killed Uzzah, the circumstances of that death put it in a very Job-like category, where in the Bible, God killed, maybe similar to when Job's friends say, God is punishing you, Job. As in some circumstances, God killed or God is punishing may not so much be about matching sinful cause with judgmental effect, but rather representative of this whole big mystery of bad things happening to good people and the resulting question, if God is all-powerful and just, how can that happen? However we try to make sense of it, with the kind of question David is wrestling with, is it now that we can imagine him writing, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with these thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? Look on me and answer, O Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. That's Psalm 13, by the way. But let's not forget that David must have been wrestling with two questions. The first may not have an answer that we can fully comprehend in this world, but what about that second one? What about in a world where bad things happen to good people, can I still trust God? Well, the story tells us that while David is stewing, not sure what to do next, and groaning in anger and fear towards God, the strangest things start happening. In the house that David parked that ark to get some space from it and figure out whether God could still be trusted, in that house, the strangest and most wonderful things start happening. The Bible, as it often is light on specifics, but we're told that the house receives big blessings. We can only imagine what that means. Did their blackberry vines all miraculously die off? Did their toilet that kept clogging start flushing like a dream? Did the family of rats move out of their attic? Were they suddenly able to get pregnant after believing they were barren? Did they just wake up every morning super jazzed about the day? Was it all those things at once? The story doesn't dwell on those details, but whatever it was enough for someone to go describe it to David. And it was enough that David realizes he has some semblance of an answer to that second question. David, terrified that God may not be trustworthy, got his answer, which is this, which is a similar answer to what Job gets, by the way. When it comes to pain and blessings, God's ways are not as predictable as we want. Things do not work out in the predictable ways we hope. God may not always ensure in this world that good people only get good things for being so good, and bad people always get bad things for being so bad. But God is instead a God of gratuitous goodness. God's essence is not about some legalistic scheme of do this and get that. God's essence is to pour out blessing. While the negative side of this coin is that bad things can still happen to good people, the good side of the coin, the eternal side of the coin, is that God's more important essence is grace. God is not limited to a you must be good to get blessed formula. God's eternal essence is about pouring out blessing in grace, whether or not we're perfect, which is good news, because none of us are. In a world of unexplainable pain, with good reason, we turn to God and say, God, can you be trusted? Are you actually good? And God says, yes. And so David gets this message, and David gets back up and at it. David has that answer. And is this perhaps when David finishes writing Psalm 13? Psalm 13 is the one I just read, the one where God, where David is pounding God with questions like, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? And might we imagine that it's now, right before he gets up and back at it, that David pens those last couple lines that quickly end the psalm. After God pours out God's blessing and an overwhelming yes to David's fearful question, is it now that David might have hastily added, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to God because God has dealt bountifully with me. And so David, filled with gratitude for confirmation that despite this broken world, God's essence is gratuitous goodness and grace, gets back on the road with that ark. And he gets back up in front of it, and he dances. Having held his breath for some time, having then surely caught his breath by bringing his honest pain to God, David now exhales in joyous celebration. During the first leg of the journey, before he had to park the ark to pray, you'll remember that the text says that David danced with all his might. But now it says that David danced with all his might in his underwear. Did he now dance with so much might that the rest of his clothes just fell off? The story doesn't say, but the point is, if he was dancing with all his might before this, he's now dancing with all of his might on a whole nother level. Like double his maximum might or something, giving it 110% if he's doing an interview later. More might than he even knew he had when he thought he was dancing with all his might before. All of which is to say, David dances like one who has clearly been through the dark night of the soul and has emerged on the other side as one who no longer has all the answers, but has heard a profound answer to one question: can God be trusted? Where the answer is yes. And more than that, it's a profound declaration that not only can God be trusted, but that God's essence, the eternal essence, is grace and goodness. And so David celebrates. David does the only thing that we should do when we reach moments of realizing and remembering God's incredible grace. David celebrates. Now, this might mean different things for different ones of us, but David also dances. Now, I'm guessing that if I took a poll, we'd be at differing opinions about whether or not we wish the Bible could give us an actual visual depiction of David's dance in this moment. Guessing some of us would love to see what it looks like to see someone dance the dance of celebration that pours out in response to realizing that God is trustworthy and full of grace and gratuitous goodness, a dance so thrilling that it just won't just knock your socks off, but apparently your pants and shirt too. Some of us probably wouldn't mind seeing what that kind of celebration looks like. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt that David has a reputation as a pretty good-looking guy. But some of you also probably feel like, no, that's all right. I'm good. I'll take the Bible at its word on that. I don't need to see this. Well, either way, the Bible doesn't include any YouTube links here, so it's a moot point. But what if the Bible tried to take that moment of celebration and put it into words for us? What if David did? Might it sound something like this? Oh God, you are majestic in everything on earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Even the giggling of babies, full of your goodness bubbling over into this world, even those babies can silence haters and doubters. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars you made, I can't believe you're even concerned with us. And yet, you love us so much, you made us barely lower than yourselves. You crown us with glory and honor. You give us dominion over the creation that you created with your own hands. All sheep and oxen, beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, whatever passes along. Oh God, you are awesome. Friends, this week, as you let this psalm and the other psalms of praise echo in your heart, like the ones on the daily breathing exercise in your bulletin for this week, where in your life have you experienced grace like this? Where, when you needed it most, have you found the assurance that you can still trust God? Where in your life has God's goodness drawn you into your own dance, whatever that looks like, of gratuitous celebration? And where, right now, might you remember that goodness and dance again? In a world full of brokenness, pain, and legitimate questions about suffering and injustice, those of us working to bring healing and comfort can often be the first to burn out. Which is why God both encourages us to be agents of peace that do the hard, nasty, discouraging work of kingdom building, but also agents of peace who can dance, who can recognize God's grace and goodness when it's there to be recognized, who can let go of all that pain for a moment and be renewed and strengthened by the grace of God and just dance.